This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickard. Coming up, why our culture appreciates funny men more than funny women.
First, it's time for Wisconsin Life. The International Crane Foundation, based in Baraboo, works around the world to save cranes. Producer Brianne Shasso spent a day at its headquarters learning about its conservation work with whooping cranes.
How long ago did the chick hatch?
20 minutes, maybe? 15 minutes? Just out. We asked this chick not to hatch until this morning so that you can see it.
That's Bryant Tarr, curator of birds for the International Crane Foundation.
So this bird has been in the other room for 2 days now when it started peeping. Then it pipped, which is it makes that first little hole in the shell. And then it rests for about 24 hours. And then the next day it just saws its way around and pops out. And that's what just happened.
We're silent in the room where the chick is kept. Tarr lets me peek in the incubator at the chick after turning out the light so he or she can't see me. The chick, who has a June birthday, is damp, brown, and maybe a little bigger than a tennis ball, showing no signs yet of the snowy plumage it'll one day have. The chick will later be named Phantom, following this year's theme of naming the whooping crane chicks after Wisconsin lakes. She is part of the foundation's Direct Autumn Release Program, which began in 2005. Phantom will spend the next few months learning how to be a crane from scientists wearing crane suits. Costume rearing helps the chicks avoid imprinting on humans and is something the foundation began experimenting with in the 1980s.
My name is Marianne Wellington, and I am a lead aviculturist and a chick rearing supervisor.
Wellington's work includes spending the coming months, along with others, wearing white costumes mimicking whooping cranes and carrying MP3 players that play sounds a parent crane would make for the chicks. The costumes cover people from head to toe and include a puppet worn on one of the person's hands that resembles a crane's head. There's absolutely no talking.
I learned a lot from other species on what I should or shouldn't do in costume, or what I can and can't do in costume. When you're wearing a costume, your puppet is on your hand, and so you need to think about the fact that your hand acts like a head, and so your hand has to be looking at different things. So when an airplane goes over, you cock your head a little bit so that one eye is looking up at the airplane or at the hawk flying over. But if it's a hawk or something they're not sure about, they'll start watching longer and longer, and you're like, oh, what is that? And so you just need to learn to freeze. And so for me, it is more of a, if I think about it correctly, it's more of a zen interaction, trying to be a crane as much as I can.
In the fall, the whooping crane chicks are released near older whooping cranes so they can learn the migration route south.
It's a time of lots of emotions. So you're sad because you're letting these animals that you were working with so much, you get attached to them. It's hard not to. You get attached to them, so it's sad to see them go. But there's this fantastic feeling to see them fly. And I see them fly anyway. From day to day, taking them out, they fly, and it's amazing that they come back. It's just amazing. But to see them fly and be cranes in the wild, it's just fantastic.
In early November, 8 whooping crane chicks were released. 2 other chicks, one of which is Phantom, were kept because of their good genetics.
Wisconsin Life is produced by Erica Janik. It's a co-production of Wisconsin Public Radio and Wisconsin Public Television in partnership with the Wisconsin Humanities Council. Additional support comes from Lowell and Mary Peterson of Appleton. Find more online at wisconsinlife.org.
Joining us now to talk more about the efforts to help cranes is Rich Belfast, president and CEO of the International Crane Foundation. Rich, welcome back to Central Time.
Hi, thanks. Great to be on with you.
Well, Rich, we'll talk to you some more about the efforts to restore the whooping crane in the country. But first, I want to talk about, we clearly heard the emotion there from the person working with cranes in that Wisconsin Life piece. How attached do you feel there to the cranes you work with at the Crane Foundation?
Ah, that's great. And thank you so much for doing that story. That was a really fun story. Mm-hmm. Yes, our group and those who come to get to know us get very, very attached to these birds. It's an amazing experience up here in Baraboo. You can all see all 15 species of cranes of the world. and visitors get very attached to the birds. They see them up close, and, you know, they're very large birds, and you sort of look at them eye to eye. And our staff that work with the birds develop very close relationships with the birds because they do so much intimate work with them, raising them in costume, raising them from chicks up until they can actually migrate. And it's very emotional to have the birds ultimately fledge into the wild. So,
what are the chances like of the chicks you raise and are released? Are the chances pretty good that they'll make it and survive again for another year and beyond?
It's a very step-by-step process. There's all kinds of wonderful things that have come from reintroducing the birds to the wild. They're pairing up, which is a big step. Cranes are very selective in their mates, and so part of the challenge is just getting them to pair up in the wild. They're migrating back and forth long distances, and the pairs are laying eggs, and they're hatching chicks. And the big challenge is getting those chicks to rear up to adults in the wild, ultimately. And there's lots of things that go after chicks in the wild, from bird predators to raccoons and possums and all sorts of things, and many challenges. And so part of it is just seeing them through and making it ultimately to becoming breeding birds themselves so that they can sustain the population in the wild.
As we heard, part of the success there is going to be making sure those birds don't imprint on humans early on. And this is not a trivial issue. You've got a crane there, I think not a whooping crane, but another kind of crane, who did imprint on humans very, very early in her life, I think it was.
Yeah, they can. The birds, once the chicks hatch, they'll imprint very quickly on the first thing they see. And some of the very early whooping crane reintroductions, which were done out in Idaho back in the 70s, there was an attempt to get whoopers back in the wild by hatching the eggs in sandhill chicks, which seemed like a good idea. They would learn to migrate with the sandhills and learn their old migration routes that were lost. But the problem was that they imprinted on sandhills and thought they were sandhills back then. So we put an extraordinary amount of effort now into having those chicks imprint on whooping cranes, either through rearing the chicks with whooping crane live adults, which is a natural parent rearing method, or having their first exposure to be people but in costumes that look just like whooping cranes, so that they still have a very strong association and identity of themselves as whooping cranes. So that's much of the work, and as you captured on that little clip from our site, in order to do that, we have to really minimize human sounds and really make it a very crane-like youth experience for these chicks as they grow.
How is whooping crane conservation going right now in the United States and beyond?
Well, whooping crane conservation is both a great success story and a huge challenge. The whole reason that we're reintroducing, you know, these birds back in the eastern part of the U.S., releasing the birds in Wisconsin, is our concern over the original wild flock. And those birds migrate. They breed way, way up in northern Canada in a place called Wood Buffalo National Park. And then they winter along the coast of Texas at Aransas National Wildlife Refuge. And that original flock got as low as 15 birds back in the 1940s, and they've recovered to about 300 now. But it's a very vulnerable flock, certainly one of the rarest birds in North America. And those birds have a long migration route, and there's challenges all along the way, missing power lines, occasionally getting shot by people on the route, and especially on their wintering grounds down in Texas, where you have land development issues, lack of fresh water, and problem with droughts, and many challenges down on the wintering ground. So we're working on a lot of those problems throughout their range, working very intensively with those wild birds. But the reintroduction was very much in part to kind of hedge our bets and to have a second population separate from the birds that migrate between Canada and Texas to increase the overall chance that the birds will ultimately survive. So it's very much part of the strategy and the challenge. So we're delighted that the birds have recovered. Like I said, there's more than 300 in the wild now and more than 600 in existence, which is a wonderful story, but still a long way to go to really secure the birds in the wild.
You mentioned those power lines, and I understand there's some, I think, kind of low-tech efforts to help whooping cranes avoid flying into power lines as they migrate.
Yeah, one of the challenges with power lines is really where they're sighted, and generally the cranes can see them pretty well, but when you have power lines that are sighted close to where the birds roost, say on a river or in a wetland, or if you have power lines in a place where the chicks are just learning to fly and sort of taking some of their first flights, they're particularly vulnerable. They're not good at evading power lines, and they may not see them if there's cloudy weather or they fly in to a resting site after dark and things like that. So a lot of it, a lot of the work is really in getting power lines sited correctly in the first place to avoid really critical areas. And then you have a lot more flexibility in broader areas. And then we also do marking of lines in certain areas so they have some kind of reflective material on them to make them a little bit easier to see. So there's a whole bunch of things we can do to try and prevent that impact. But getting them in the right place in the first place is really, really important.
And just briefly, as we wrap up, how can people who are listening help with crane conservation?
Well, we have a lot of loyal supporters. We're really, really grateful to everyone who supports our efforts. Get to know us better is the first thing I would suggest. We have a website and you can find easily on the International Crane Foundation. We work with a lot of great partners, and come and visit us. And Baraboo is a great place to learn more about our work. And one of the exciting things this time of year is we've also got thousands and thousands of sandhills around in the state, the sandhill crane, which is our most abundant crane. And a lot of people come and enjoy those in the wild and the area all around ICF. We probably have 10,000 in the wild near us right now. And great opportunity to experience cranes up close and learn more about conservation efforts for them.
Well, Rich, thanks a lot for joining us.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Rich Belfis is the president and CEO of the International Crane Foundation based in Baraboo.